Hector. Mind Grenade is a pop culture-based show that dives into TV, movies, music, comics, and a whole lot more. And this is me getting back on schedule with our 2000 movies reviews. This is where I do a review of a film without my co-hosts. This is just a little solo affair. So now that I've wrapped up the Marvel Studios What If reaction episodes, I'm back to doing reviews of films. And the timing lined up perfectly for me to review the current adaptation to Frank Herbert's Dune, directed by Denis Villeneuve. And you couldn't find a better director, a better filmmaker to get excited to get back into these reviews. So a little explanation on these 2000 movie episodes. If you're new to the show, these are where I pick a movie that I've not watched before. This one's easy because Dune just came out. But usually these are films that I've wanted to watch in the past, but never got around to it, and I'm finally getting to them and reviewing them here on the podcast. A parameter that I've added to these reviews is that the films that I pick have had to have been released after the year 2000, hence 2000 movies. So we'll get into it. I just wanted to thank everyone for listening. Thanks for tuning into the show. Let me kind of set the mood a little bit here. So, yeah, like I said, I just got done reviewing the What If episodes that were streaming on Disney Plus, and that was just kind of a little break from doing the movie reviews. But before I took that break, I'd watch a Denis Villeneuve film that I had not watched before that I was going to save for these podcasts, but I'll probably just add that into this episode. There's a Denis Villeneuve film, I think it was in 2013, called Prisoners, starring Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal. And Paul Dano, I think, is in that movie as well, if I remember correctly. Great cast, like in most Denis Villeneuve films. That one was very dark in its subject matter. Reminded me of one of his other films in that same sense of just like the tone, is Sicario, which is another great movie of Denis Villeneuve's. Not for everyone, very, very grim, very dark, but it kind of shines a light on something, injustices, bad things that happen in our society. So, you know, it tells me that Denis Villeneuve does care about the betterment of humanity, and that he shines a light on these dark subjects. Having said that, and in particular with Prisoners, at the end it has an upbeat kind of it ends in an upbeat, maybe not a happy ending per se in the Hollywood sense, but it does have an upbeat ending after a bunch of really horrible stuff happens. And there is a resolution, and it does end in a lighter place than you would expect it after watching a two-hour movie about parents looking for their children. I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to bum anybody out. But it does end in a satisfying way. So let me see if I remember what grade I gave that film. Prisoners, I think I gave it like a, I think I gave it somewhere in like a B, something like that. That sounds about right. Probably like a solid B right there in the middle, not a minus or a plus, a B, down the middle grade there. And boy, where did I see that? Yeah, I watched it on Hulu. It was streaming on Hulu, and it looks like it still is. So I would recommend that film. Like I said, you should brace yourself from just some really dark subject matter. But it was great performances by Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman, but that's expected. And it's a little bit of a spoiler review for any of the Denis Villeneuve films that I've watched, that I would recommend any of them. He's a great director. Arrival, Sicario, Blade Runner. Yeah, he's got quite the filmography. And he seems to choose very interesting subject matter for his films. Some films are smaller and quieter, And then some films are quite epic, like Blade Runner 2049 and the movie we're going to be talking about here shortly, Dune. He's quite a talented director. I want to, before moving forward, put out the spoiler alert. So if you don't want Dune ruined for you, you can hit pause on the podcast and then go fire up the HBO Max or buy yourself an IMAX ticket and then come back and join me here for this discussion on the latest from Denis Villeneuve. So we'll get into it. Dune, part one, by the way. It's kind of important going in. This is just half the book this film is covering. And it's directed by Denis Villeneuve. And as you can tell, I like saying the director's name. Very cool name there. And I mentioned his filmography, the highlights of his filmography there. Quite an impressive career trajectory going on for this director. And Dune is an epic science fiction film, and it stars Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Oscar Isaac, Jason Momoa, Stellan Skarsgård, just to name a few, actually. Quite the cast here with this film. Like I said, it's an epic film, so it would naturally have a deep bench of a cast. And, I've talked about this film leading up to, this film was supposed to come out last year, so I've been talking about it on the podcast for quite a while leading up to it, my anticipation, my excitement for it. Having said that, I went into it knowing very little about the subject matter. Very little would be, I knew that it was in the far-flung future. I knew there was something to do with a planet that had this substance called spice that was very important to the society, to humans. I guess there's, I kind of figured there was interplanetary travel, interstellar travel. What else? I knew about the sandworms. I knew they were somehow connected to the spice, the substance that the MacGuffin, I guess it's the thing everybody's chasing after. And then what else did I know? I knew there was some kind of like political intrigue, I guess, in the sense that there's warring families or conspiring families. So very little. I didn't really. I had seen parts of the original David Lynch film from 1980 something, 84, 85, 86, somewhere in there. I had seen bits and pieces, but David Lynch, and I brought this up in the podcast before, it's an acquired taste. Never really dove too far into David Lynch's stuff. I've watched a couple of his movies. Most of his movies are pretty avant-garde, pretty out there. I respect that, but it just wasn't for me. And I feel like I was too young for Dune. It seemed pretty serious at the time. I was more into Star Wars and more kind of broad, kind of sci-fi, less so the more specific stuff like Dune. Where Dune's getting into a lot of like kind of sociopolitical kind of allegory, I guess. Allegory, maybe, or metaphor. It's probably more allegory. But so the knowledge I had for Dune was very limited. I knew it was a book. I knew that Frank Herbert wrote it back in the 60s, I'm pretty sure. So going into this, I didn't read the book, and I wasn't that familiar with the David Lynch film, and I was just wanting to go in and let it just kind of wash over me and just go for the ride. My worry was that it was going to be, because the book is famously known for being super dense, in the way that the Silmarillion is, compared to the Lord of the Rings, is just dense, kind of like just information overload. So I was worried that the movie was going to be that way, just kind of impenetrable. But to my pleasure, to my delight, and my appreciation to the director, this was very palatable. It was very easy to just get wrapped up in it and go along for the ride. There was some stuff that left questions, but I like that because I don't like everything being explained to me. I like having some mystery in the story. So I think that balance was done very well. The giving you enough so that you're invested, but not so much that you feel like you're being... That you're not feeling like you're a five-year-old being having to have everything explained to you just with a bunch of exposition that just bogs down the momentum of the story. So, very happy that it turned out that way. I'd mentioned before that this is a part one. It's Dune part one. And it's the director and, I guess... Warner Brothers, they decided to split the book in half and just put this out. So I feel like it was important for me to know that. I think it would have changed my experience if I didn't know that there was going to be a drop-off at the end of the film. It is quite an abrupt drop-off. It just like they just start walking away. That was okay with me, knowing that that was going to happen. The anxiety, the concern was that then this film, with everything that's been going on in real life, with everything, I was worried that this film being day and date release on HBO Max and in the theaters, that was gonna kind of fuck up the box office receipts or whatever criteria was needed for them to make a sequel, to green light a sequel. I was worried that this is just going to be half of a story. Then for whatever reason, it underperformed. And then we wouldn't get a second part. Like that's where some of the concern was for me, but fortunately my concerns were alleviated. The sequel got greenlit a couple days. What was it like? I think the movie was released, and then in the middle of the week following, it got greenlit. So the movie was released on a weekend, and then the middle of the week following, it got greenlit. So Denis Villeneuve and crew are ready to get the sequel going for a release date of 2023, I think it is. I was so glad to hear that because I was worried because I know Suicide Squad or The Suicide Squad, the second Suicide Squad movie, made plenty of money, but, underperformed, by the expectations set by Warner Brothers. So it doesn't look like, even though the second Suicide Squad movie, was better reviewed and was a better movie, it's still underperformed. So that was kind of at the back of my mind when going into watch Dune and getting excited about it, was that sure it was going to make enough money, but I was worried that it wasn't going to make enough money to be greenlit. But everything turned out all right for this film. So getting into the film itself, I'm going to get into the stuff I liked and stuff I didn't like, and I'm going to have a hard time finding stuff I didn't like about this film. But the cast was pretty impressive. It's a fully stacked cast. You got Timothée Chalamet as the lead, and this is really the first movie I've watched where he's got such a big role. Apparently he was in Interstellar that I don't remember him in. I've watched that movie once. But I don't remember him in that film, so I have I don't have a lot to go on there. One of the recordings we did, I think the last Mind Grenade we did, Matt, my co-host, mentioned that, he wasn't that excited with, Timothée Chalamet's, performance here, but, and Matt's read the book, the novel Dune, and so he knows more than I would, but, from the little bit I know, this the description for Paul Atreides. Paul Atreides is the role Timothy Chalamet plays. Paul Atreides is described as kind of slight for his age, I guess. And Timothy Chalamet seems to kind of fit that description. So, yeah, I'm not sure. It worked completely for me. I was drawn in, and I feel like he carried the film pretty expertly. You know, it does help, though. Like I said, it's a stat cast. So you got Stellan Skarsgård. You got, you've got Oscar Isaac, Rebecca Ferguson, Jason Momoa. Wow, what a great performance from him in this. I wanted just to keep seeing more of Jason Momoa in this film. I'm missing people because there's so many great people in this. See Zendaya. She's not in it enough. I figure she's going to be in it more in the next film. I am missing somebody that I wanted to bring up. I forget the actor's name from No Country for Old Men. He's in it as well. He's got a smaller role. Javier Bardem, that's the actor. He's in it for a small amount as well. But I guess my point is that when you have a decent lead, a good actor as your lead, and then you fill the ensemble around them with A-list actors, I think it really helps the film out. And who else is in this? David Dalmachian is in it for a little bit. Yeah, all great actors. You know, with Timothy Chalamet, though, I have noticed his kind of trajectory in his career in the last 10 years, I guess, 10-ish years, that he's an actor on the rise. And after watching this, it gets me even more excited to watch the what's the Wes Anderson movie that's just been getting, that it was just released, The French Connection. Is that what the name of this movie is? The French Connection. Let's see here. The French Dispatch. Excuse me. Sorry, Wes Anderson. The French Dispatch has also got a crazy ensemble, but that's also Wes Anderson's kind of thing, is to get a bunch of really good actors, a big group of them. So that wasn't lost on me. The big the big robust cast in this film in Dune. So what else? So story structure and the world building. With the world building, you have Frank Herbert to credit for that, because I've always heard that the books are really dense and stuff. And I don't say dense in a derogatory way. It worked out perfectly for this, because it reminds me of, like, when you look at Lord of the Rings, and then you have the Silmarillion, which is, like, essentially the Bible for the Lord of the Rings. It's essentially, like, the history. And it's really just, it feels like a history book of some place that doesn't exist. And that's how I've kind of viewed Dune, even though I've never read it. But that's how the descriptions of it have kind of come across to me. And the way I feel like it benefits this film, and it's also benefited the Lord of the Rings franchise, is having all that world building done, like, and thought out, and so that when you do a film like this, focusing on just a small portion of this built-in universe, that it does feel lived in. It does feel like if you go past the confines of the screen, of the camera capturing what's going on, it feels like there's a world going on beyond what you're focusing on. I hope that makes sense. It doesn't feel like the characters would just stop existing, or the world would stop existing once they walk off screen. It feels like a living, breathing universe, because somebody like Frank Herbert or J.R.R. Tolkien spent all that time, you know, creating the language, creating the history. For example, one thing I noticed after watching this film, not having read the books again, like I said, I noticed how technologically advanced because the story of Dune is supposed to take place 8,000 years from our human history. So, it's quite technologically advanced. I mean, you see it with their ships and everything else. But I did notice that no one has guns in this. Like, there's a bunch of warriors, and you see battles and everything. But it's all done with knives and hand-to-hand combat and no guns. So it made me think, it's like, wait a minute, like that, there has to be something to that, or is there something to it? So I did a little research online and found out that that was deliberate, and that's part of the history and stuff. And what I like, and the compliment I'm trying to pay to this film, is that there wasn't a bunch of, they didn't spend 20 minutes explaining that. It's matter of fact, the way it's portrayed, the way it's laid out in the narrative of this film, and the way the director presented it to us. So I like that. I don't like everything having to be explained. Explain what's important, and then later on, I'm sure things will come to light. Like, why do a couple of the characters have computer-like abilities? There's Mentat, I think is the name of the types of characters, the good guys. Duke Atreides has one of his lieutenants or whatever. He goes up to him and asks him to formulate some calculation, and his lieutenant, you see his eyes go white for a second, and then when they come back, he's got the calculation all done. They don't spend a lot of time explaining why that is, why it's just you notice it, and then we move on. It's just a normal thing to them. They've been living in the world, so it would be weird for them to just stop and explain, well, this is why, explaining it to you like you're a five-year-old. No, you see it, and we move on, and it doesn't go against the rules that they've been setting up for the world. It's part of the world. And sure, it might get mentioned or it might get explained later, but I don't like the constant stop and go when it comes to movies like this with the exposition. Exposition is important, but you got to be clever on how you lay it out, and not everything needs to be explained. I realize this is a fantasy film, but I think the best fantasy is when it's done in an approach that kind of mimics real life. And we don't go every day explaining how computers work or the internet works or why certain things are, because we're so used to them. So you'd expect the characters in the film to be used to it. Like, they're not going to explain why, every day, why, Timothy Chalamet's character doesn't go to his dad and go, hey, why don't we have guns here? Like, he knows why they don't have guns there. So it'd be weird for them to just spend 10 minutes, 15 minutes explaining the entire history of why this society doesn't have guns so prevalent in their day-to-day. So bravo to the filmmakers here. And really, a lot of the credit goes to Frank Herbert for writing such a lush, thought-out world and history here for these characters. So let me round this all out with my experience viewing this, the aestheticness of my viewing experience. So I did watch this on an IMAX screen, and this is definitely a film I would have regretted not seeing in an IMAX screen. I know it was playing on HBO Max streaming same day that it premiered in theaters. When I went to the IMAX theater, it's the trailers that played, the ones I remember. There's the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer, which I'd seen a bunch of times already, but looks cool. I'm excited to go watch that. What else played? The new Batman trailer looks really cool. I love the Batmobile in this new iteration. It's very hot rod kind of analog, and I really like that. So the reason I bring up the trailers is because one of the other trailers that came up while I'm sitting there in front of this enormous, IMAX screen is the trailer to the new Matrix movie, Matrix Resurrections. And I've already watched this trailer online a couple times, but the IMAX screen is so impressive that it felt like I had never seen that trailer. Like, I was like, holy shit. I was so impressed that it felt like I had I was experiencing something completely new. And it all had to do with the sound, the screen quality. It was amazing. It got me way more excited. I was already excited for Matrix Resurrections, but now I'm just like, I'm going to have to go watch that the very first weekend on the IMAX screen. So when the movie itself, when Dune comes on and I'm watching this on this enormous screen, the sound system was making, just when ships were taken off, the entire theater would just rumble and shake. And Denis Villeneuve, he deliberately made this film for the IMAX screen. There's scenes in this film, and I noticed this, where like the aspect ratio would shift. I guess there's two aspect ratios for IMAX. These aspect ratios are IMAX, but there's two of them, and one of them fills the entire IMAX screen, and then the other one kind of like is slightly smaller, because I would notice the bars at the top and bottom of the screens would shift from having the bars and then not having them. It would fill out, it would go back and forth from filling the screen completely to just going to this kind of I'm not going to say smaller, because it's not. The bars are really thin whenever it truncated is the word I was looking for. And even that's too strong of a word, but it does shorten it slightly. But the reason I bring that up is because that's a director like this will use that as a tool to accentuate the storytelling. For example, if you're going from a reaction shot of a character looking onto the desert dunes of, what's the name? Arrakis. That's where all the spice is at. So a character is looking out into the desert, and in the distance there's a sandworm coming their way. The shot of the character looking out will be that truncated, smaller IMAX aspect ratio. And then when it switches to the shot looking out to the majestic just dunes of Arrakis, it will fill out the screen, and then it'll go back. So it'll do that back and forth just to show, accentuate the grandeur. He'll go back and forth from, I think the aspect ratio is like 1:4:3 is the smaller one, and then 1:9:0 is the bigger one. And the difference is very slight. Like, I noticed it, but like, I doubt a lot of people would have noticed it, but it's very, I can tell it's deliberate, but I can tell it works, because there was a lot of awe-inspiring shots in this film. I do believe that you can enjoy this film thoroughly at home, but it's not the same experience as it is in the IMAX theater. It was a truly epic in the true sense of the word. It was a truly epic experience watching it in the IMAX theater. I watched it the first weekend it was out, and then I wanted to watch it the second weekend, this past weekend, but I was just too busy this past weekend. But I really wanted to go watch it again in the theater. I know the Eternals, the Marvel movie's coming out, so Dune's gonna make way for this film to occupy the IMAX screen. So I don't know. I might go watch it again just on a standard screen, but and I have an HBO subscription, so I can watch Dune at home, but I don't have, the draw is not there. The excitement for me isn't there to just sit at home and watch it. Even though I enjoy the film thoroughly, I was just like so blown away with the experience at the IMAX theater that I wanted to go watch it a second time. But I'm just glad I watched it at least once in the theater on the IMAX screen. I would have totally regretted. it's like Denis Villeneuve's previous film, Blade Runner 2049. I watched that in the movie theater, and I feel like if I hadn't watched it on the big screen possible and then caught it streaming or something like that, I would have known. I would have been like, oh, damn, I wish I had watched this on a big screen. So, and it's the same with this. I'm very happy I watched it on the biggest screen possible. Denis Villeneuve and Christopher Nolan are directors known for making movies that are big, giant spectacles to be watched on the biggest screen possible. And I don't feel like all their films are that way, but they do. That's their aim. Like, for example, something like I just mentioned, Blade Runner 2049. That's definitely something that's a big spectacle of a movie, but there's substance there story-wise. Denis Villeneuve film that I don't necessarily have had to have watched on a giant screen is Sicario or Prisoners, I mentioned earlier on this recording. For Christopher Nolan, I wish I would have had watched Dunkirk on a big screen. What's another Christopher Nolan? Oh, Tenet. I didn't necessarily have to watch that on a big screen. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't the ginormous spectacle that something like Inception was or The Dark Knight. So, I do see the argument for and against the big screen. Not every movie demands it, but movies like Dune definitely demand it. And I'll say it again, it's not the same experience watching it at home. I still think the movie and the story is still very strong, but when they film it with an IMAX camera and they put so much effort into the visuals and the sound design in this film is awesome. The what are they called? The omnithopters or the these helicopter type crafts that they fly around in. It's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome design, and the sound design and everything about it is visually and sonically and aesthetically appealing. It's very, very cool. So stuff I didn't care for this. You know, I'm going to give this a pretty high grade, but I can't give it the highest grade because even though I knew going into it, this is a first chapter to a bigger story and then it was going to drop off at the end. Even though I knew that and it didn't take away from my enjoyment of it, I have to be objective about my review and my grading. I do have to count against it that it's doesn't have the traditional three act story structure. So you get a first act, the second act, and then the third act's really not there in this film, and I do have to be objective and count that against it. So my grade for Dune, the 2021 film by Denis Villeneuve, I give it an A-. That's a fucking high score. I don't really just hand out A's, so this is pretty impressive. An A for me is something that I'm going to want to watch again, which I've been wanting to watch again since I walked out of the theater the initial viewing. So, an A-. I think I've only handed out 2-3 A's this year. I think the film Nobody with Bob Odenkirk, I gave it an A or an A-, somewhere in there. I think, A Quiet Place 2, I gave a pretty high score. I'm pretty sure that was an A. And this definitely, highly recommended. I have to consider people who aren't into science fiction. I don't know, man. I mean, this is a really pretty high concept science fiction, but still, I think it's very palatable. And someone who's not necessarily into that doesn't seek out science fiction, I think you could probably still enjoy this because of like it's really kind of a human story, and there's relatable themes in this. But I can see somebody who's not into sci-fi just kind of being turned off of it, just surface level. But I think for people who are into, your Lord of the Rings or your Star Wars or stuff like that, this was done so well, so expertly. that it's a high recommendation for me. I'm really looking forward and happy that there's a sequel on the way. So out of my co-hosts, who would I recommend this to? Matt's already watched this. Ian's already watched it too, since we recorded last, and he enjoyed it quite a bit. And he agreed with me with the comparisons to the approach they had for the Lord of the Rings IP and the Lord of the Rings films. Jason, I'm not sure. I'm sure Jason's watched it by now, and I think he would appreciate this film as well. So this is a recommendation that I think all three of my co-hosts would get behind. And I think that's it for my review on Dune. I'm sure we'll end up talking more about it when me and the guys get back together. But to reiterate here, the title is Dune Part 1. It's in theaters now, and it's streaming on HBO Max for another couple weeks, I think. And I recommend both venues. So looking ahead here for the podcast, it is November. 2021's wrapping up, but there's still plenty of stuff that I'm excited for that's due before the year's over. And I'll go down this list real quick with the release dates here. So I just bought an Xbox Series S, which wasn't an easy thing to do because the supply is scarce. But I was able to secure one. And just in time, because Call of Duty Vanguard is due out in a couple days, November 5th. And that's really the only video game I've been able to play. Not able. I've bought several video games in the last couple years, but I buy them and then I never play them. Call of Duty seems to be the only thing I spend any kind of time on playing. And I wanted to jump on a new console, a next-gen console, just in time for a new Call of Duty game, especially one that's set in World War II. My favorite Call of Duty game in the past is World at War, and I was excited to see that this next one, Call of Duty Vanguard, is set. I think it's set like towards the end of World War II. So I played a little bit of it, the beta, and I just kind of gave me a rush of nostalgia from playing World at War years ago. So that comes out in a couple days. I'm excited for that, and I'm sure I'll talk about that in future episodes of Mind Grenade. Let's see. Music-wise, Lana Del Rey, I spoke about this a little bit on the last episode of the podcast, is Blue Bannisters is the album that just dropped. My recommendation for this album, and is a decent album. I'm still kind of digesting it, but the standout track for me is Thunder. I felt after the last album, what was the last album called? Chemtrails Over the Country Club, her last album that came out months ago, and this is the second album she's dropped in the same calendar year. The previous album had a song called White Dress, which like was bordering on masterpiece, in my opinion. So I was kind of figuring she's kind of like on the cusp of dropping some masterpieces in her career, and not quite on this next album. I was kind of hoping it would happen on Blue Bannisters, but strong album, got decent reviews, but I don't think there's a masterpiece on there, unless it's something where like I need to listen to a song enough and then realize that it's genius. But as of right now, I think the only song that the strongest song, the song that stood out for me is a song called Thunder off of Blue Bannisters. And it's pretty brilliant, but short of being a masterpiece. But she's pretty prolific, so I am looking forward to more installments in her discography. Let's see what else. Edgar Wright, director of Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz. What else has he done? Ooh, Baby Driver. So his newest movie, Last Night in Soho, is a film that I wanted to watch this past weekend. But again, to reiterate, I was pretty busy this past weekend, so I didn't have a chance to get out. So I'm going to try to make it to Last Night in Soho with Anya Taylor-Joy, who I'm just smitten for after watching Queen's Gambit. She's in this Edgar Wright film, so I'm going to make an effort to go watch it this weekend. And I'll get back to you guys on my thoughts on that. What else is coming out? Eternals is coming out this weekend. I'll have to see what happens with that. Matrix Resurrections comes out December 22nd, and I already gushed about that on this episode. Super stoked for that. Keanu Reeves is the man, and ready to get back into that that universe. And Lana Wachowski's direct. Is it Lana? Or don't remember if it's her sister. I know it's just one of them. This time, and not the Wachowski siblings. It's just one of them, but they're both awesome. So I'm really stoked for this. Let's see here. Demon Slayer season 2. Boy, out of all the stuff I've watched this year, Demon Slayer is my favorite thing, and I'm sure I'll be speaking on Demon Slayer season 2 more on future episodes of the podcast. Specifically, I'm planning doing a little pre-production on some kind of year-end episodes, probably in December. I want to see what the guys have as favorites from 2021, stuff that just kind of stuck with them this year. Me and Jason and Matt and Ian have had tons of recommendations to each other and to you, the listener. But looking back, I want to see what really kind of stood out. And for me, Demon Slayer is definitely the front runner. And we'll definitely put together an episode where we just go down our favorites of the past year. And then, of course, I'll definitely do a preview for 2022, which it's something I kind of do every year on Mind Grenade. It's kind of like make my list of what I'm looking forward to the upcoming year. I did that last year with all the films that I had planned on watching in the movie theater, and I pretty much stuck to it. There's always at least one or two movies that drops off that list, but this year I've watched everything I had on the list I had made last November or December. So these are all things that I'm looking forward to in the remainder of 2021, and our favorites of 2021. And a preview of 2022 is something we have to look forward to before the year's over here on the podcast. All right. Wow. This is one of the longer episodes I've done on my own. So I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you for subscribing. You can find a feed of the podcast on mindgrenadestudios.com or anywhere podcasts are found. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. This has been Hector saying so long, and we'll talk to you soon.